Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. But these are my favorite because these are the thought leader radio episodes where we interview the best and the brightest doing the most interesting things in the United States. Katie.
Yes.
Speaking of thought leaders, recently you were headlining an event here in Atlanta called Wit Connect, where you got to interview some of the thought leaders in that space.
Yeah. We broadcast live from there last week. It was at the Georgia Aquarium. It was pretty great. We got to interview a bunch of different people.
And who was the keynote speaker of the event that you got to interview?
Rhonda Vetteri. She was the former CTO of Estee Lauder.
I know. That was a good show. We're excited to getting her on the air shortly.
Yeah, very
excited. Working on that.
Yep.
But she won't be as interesting as who we got right now.
Definitely not.
The bird in the hand.
Yes.
The bird in the hand is Annette Shimada, and she is with Kickstart Consulting. Welcome, Annette.
Hi, Lee and Katie. Thanks so much for having me on board. And congratulations on 19 million downloads. You guys must be doing something, right?
Well, we're trying to get the word out. We find that our space in the media spectrum is we're unabashedly pro-business, and we support and celebrate business people doing important work. And that is a good description of you. Kickstart Consulting is serving a special audience in a special way. Can we talk a little bit about how you are doing that?
Sure, that would be great. So Kickstart was started about 20 years ago, and we focus specifically on business technology companies that are just coming into new areas who are serving the business audience. So we don't do so much consumer types of technologies. We do more B2B technology, so business-to-business technologies.
And then the challenge in that world is they have a difficult time getting the word out and just becoming known to the people that matter to them, right?
Sure. Well, you know, the issue is how do they build up the story of the value and what it is that they bring to the market? And you can do that through a lot of things. And what we do is specifically, it's called PR or public relations. And it's part of a bigger marketing mix. And it's really changed a lot in the last several years. So the bigger marketing mix is you're familiar with the you either have owned media, right? So that's your company web pages, your blogs, those kinds of things, your own social feeds. You have purchased, right? So that would be advertising, banner ads, sponsored things. And then you have this third kind of magical thing that's called earned media. And that's when a publication actually, or a blogger or a newsletter actually writes about you and what it is that you're doing. And what we're finding is that a lot of marketing executives, you know, when they're looking at the impact of these three programs, earned, owned, purchased, it's really the earned media that has the most credibility with your audience. So whether, whether you're an IT consulting firm and you're working with, you know, folks like you guys, right, to help make sure that all your IT tools and infrastructure works, or whether you're a laundry or a donut shop, people always want to be educated and understand and look to you as a thought leader. And that's really what PR and media relations is about.
Now, when you're talking to these new firms, and they're a lot of times they're new to marketing in this manner, is that a challenge of educating them on the value of pursuing this? Because it isn't a sure thing. Like when they run an ad, they know the ad's going to run. But when you're trying to get them earned media, it's not like they can go, oh, get me on the cover of the Wall Street Journal, you know, front page. And you're like, you can't make that promise.
Well, exactly. And so the story is really about how do our clients fit into a news story? So I'll give you an example. Yeah. So a while ago, we were working with a technology that was actually like a camera and an onboard computing and analytics engine that you could stick up in the corner of, say, Best Buy or Macy's or of a mall or even of an airport. And what this would do is it would actually track the number of people, and this one would do it anonymously, so it wasn't taking pictures. You know, we wouldn't know, oh, that's Lee Cantor walking by at this exact moment. But it would actually be able to help, for example, Best Buy or a retailer say, oh, this many people are drawn to this particular end cap part of the store. And then you kind of correlate that to, and what did the sales of products there look like at that particular time, so that you can look at traffic patterns. If you're a mall, for example, you might want to say, well, you know, how much should I be allowing for rent for particular spaces in the mall based on where that store is? Well, that's very interesting. And we eventually did get this company into, you know, the more main tier media, Wall Street Journal and so forth. But what we really did is we started with those trade publications, right? Who are the companies that are having those pain points? The retailers. So you begin with the retail and the big box publications and those associations, and that's kind of your starting point, and then you build up from there.
And that's an opportunity for all kind of B2B companies out there, right? Is start with the trade magazines that are closest to what you're doing or the clients that you're serving, and then work out.
Right. So the issue is whenever we start a program, and I think this should be useful, you know, for all of your audience, regardless of, you know, what it is that they're taking to market, is, you know, you always want to start with, who is my audience? Who am I selling to? Right. So that's very much connected to what are your sales goals? What are your marketing goals? And then what are the challenges or FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt that we have when we go and we sell to those people? Because a lot of times PR is a very critical element for eliminating the FUD. And going back to the retail example, people are concerned about privacy, right? So, there's this great technology, but retailers don't really want to get nailed for, oh, you're invading my privacy. So to give you an example of how you get ahead of a story or how you educate people when they might be concerned about an issue is we worked with this client to specifically talk about the area of retail privacy, you know, cameras or connecting to people's cell phone as they're shopping to see what they're doing. At the end of the day, that really, the story for the retailer, they want to move it toward, this is really good for the shopper and this is why, right? Because we can give you better deals or whatnot. And what you want to do is hit that fear, uncertainty, and doubt head on. So one of the ways we did it with this client is that there was a retail association that had a privacy roundtable. We got engaged in that. We worked quickly. We became the vendor quoted in their press release. And as a result, when this privacy issue or in the retail world hit the news, we were actually part of their story. So that's a great way to kind of proactively hit something head on.
And that a lot of people think PR is primarily used for like kind of crisis management, but here's an example of where you can be proactive and get ahead of the story.
You absolutely should. And I'm glad you brought up crisis management, because a crisis is not a PR crisis, right? A crisis is a company and an operational problem. And PR, how you handle it, gives you an opportunity to showcase the values of your company, right? So if you are in a crisis, you know, if an executive is philandering or embezzling, that's pretty terrible.
Right.
Or whether there's a product recall and journalists are just glomming on to try and say, what's going on, and make their own judgment. The point is, this is an opportunity for a company to address an issue and improve its culture. So our advice is always own it, admit it, tell journalists, you are looking into this. You're doing a deep dive into exactly what happened, why it happened, how to resolve it in this case, and then how to make steps to take sure to avoid it. It's, you know, you avoid that again in the future. So people sometimes think, oh, I have to talk to a journalist right away. You need to let them know that you're owning it, looking into it, doing a dive, making sure that it's resolved. And we will get back to you when we understand this more completely and we understand what we're doing and, the, you know, moving forward and how that will be good for our audience and for the world at large.
Now, how do you work with your clients to educate them about how to leverage social media? Because social media is kind of chaotic in that you can't control the message as tightly as you can in some of these other channels that you mentioned.
Right. So the way that we engage in social media is that we don't handle the aspect of crisis management and social media. That really doesn't come up with most of our clients. And that's not how we engage them. They're, believe it or not, Lee, there are actually firms who do just that. So the way that PR engages with social media is that when there's a set of journalists whose attention you want to get, you want to engage with them through LinkedIn, through Twitter. You want to comment on what it is that they're commenting on and what they're posting. And then they notice, they become aware of you as a company. And then when articles are published in their venues, those publications are always very happy to have that shared through a company's social channels, right? So if you guys get an article in you know, a local publication about the quality of people that you're interviewing, you really want to then go ahead and share that through your social media channels, because then that tells the original publication who wrote that, we care about what you wrote, and they're more likely to come back to you for more. So it's really a relationship building and also kind of an additional mouthpiece to get that article out there beyond just that one time that it actually was published.
And that's a good advice for the business owner, right, is to, if they don't have a PR firm that they work with, but they should still be kind of cultivating some of these relationships with journalists in their niche.
Right, exactly. A lot of this is stuff that a company may be able to handle internally. You know, if they have dedicated resources, that's very, very doable. It's just tricky and it's challenging to get somebody with that expertise and that focus who can do that. You know, and it's interesting because probably 10 years ago, when so many of the publications started going online, our clients would say, well, we want to make sure that, you know, we're in the print version of that magazine or journal. Now it's completely flipped. For sure, they want to be in the online version because a lot of that has terrific impact for search engine optimization or SEO, right? So that's how do you tell, you know, the Google search engines are actually driving people to your website. Well, you know, anytime you're published somewhere on a third-party website, that actually increases what we call Google juice, right?
Is that so a technical term? Is that a technical term?
Google juice? Well, that's, you know, it's one we use. I don't know if it's a technical term or not. Yes, it's very technically. But it increases your Google juice. So it really has an impact for helping your company be able to be more visible to others as they're searching around. And the other thing you want to do is make sure that The content is actually shared on your website, right? So our client who is in this retail space, when we secured for them articles in Youth Stores magazine or, the Wall Street Journal or these kinds of things, you want to publish them through all your social channels, make sure the article is available on your website. And then because of the analytics that you can do, you can see, gosh, people are coming to our website from these press releases or from these articles. Well, that's good. That's driving traffic. That's a beautiful thing. That's what you want.
Right.
And then you want to track the journey of people on your website, right? How much time are they spending once they get there looking at other articles or looking at your blogs or your news? So it's all part of the bigger mix of, you got an article, that's great. Now what are you going to do with it? You have to keep working it. And then you want to look at the data to see, is it working for you?
Right. So that's part of your role as kind of a PR strategist for the firm, right? You're helping them get the most bang for the buck for the content. So if there was a placement, you're making sure it's repurposed in all the places to get to wring out the most Google juice from it, right? And then also you're helping them create compelling content that they can repurpose and use in all these different channels as well.
Right. And the content, you know, a lot of it is really about education, dispelling a common misunderstanding or, you know, talking about things you need to know when, those kinds of things.
And then you can find out what's compelling by following some of those analytics, right? If there was a lot of interest in a certain topic, it might be a good idea to maybe do a white paper on that topic or just create more content around that topic that people seem to be interested in.
Right, exactly. And then you're also doing things like boosting posts, right? So LinkedIn is a really interesting platform for sharing information. And you can actually, I don't know if you, well, you probably know this, Lee, and I don't know how much of your audience does, but you can go in and very specifically target an audience. So, for example, one of our clients is a think tank that, you know, focuses on, well, how should companies, technologists, and privacy experts and risk and management people and the business teams all work together. So are you familiar with GDPR, the big privacy
in Europe
requirement? Yeah. Okay. So this is a good example. We actually created and placed a lot of content in legal publications and actually in Forbes and in some compliance and risk management publications about GDPR. How do you get ready for it? We did a study that showed, gee, it's surprising how many people were actually not ready for it back in the October timeframe. And then we took all of this content together that was published, including a webinar. There was a panel discussion among several experts, packaged it together as an ebook, and then shared that through our social channels, through email marketing, through through LinkedIn, through boosting posts targeted to large multinational companies and specifically people with a legal title, corporate counsel, with a governance title, you know, with a privacy title. You get really, really targeted. It's just amazing what you can do.
And that's a great example of kind of taking something that's in the news and then building kind of content around that in order to get the most bang for your buck. That, again, that's, you're looking at everything holistically and strategically. You're not just reacting. You're taking advantage
exactly.
of the news in this case.
And it was a combination of owned media. So it was some of their own blog posts that we developed. Earned media, so some articles that were published, and then we kind of created an, you know, a piece of content that then went out, and we paid, right? So that's the paid portion, to have it be available to a larger audience.
Now, how important is it to kind of periodically create an editorial calendar so that you can maximize kind of the new, some of the news things that, you know, like, you know that Christmas is happening in December, you know that Halloween's happening, like for consumer brands, that's easy to kind of jump upon. But in certain specific industries, they have a big trade show every, you know, October. There are certain things that are happening kind of, you know, in advance. And that if you know in advance, you can kind of pre-plan some things that are going to drop during those periods of time. Do you help your client in that area as well?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Lee. Thanks for bringing that up. Because, so I'll give you an example. We work with clients in the HR information management space. So there's a couple things there. One is there are a couple of shows in the fall every single year, right? And so you want to make sure that that's on your calendar, that's on your radar. And what you want to think about is not only are there journalists who might be going to those shows that maybe we should try to meet with while we're there, just kind of do a friendly, you know, meet and greet, have a cup of coffee, chat about the issues. Do you want to actually make a bit of a splash at the show? Are you planning on having a product announcement, or are any of your customers going to be, for example, presenting on the main stage? Because you want to get out that information in advance, both through press releases, through blog posts, through social media. And then actually once you're at the event, you want your executives and the other folks who are there to actually be tweeting using the hashtags that go with the show that say, oh, I'm really looking forward to hearing this person speak, or, you know, I'm in this conference and this person just made this great point. You know, tweet it, hashtag it, and then you become more visible to your audience and kind of more relevant, right? You're fitting into the news of that particular event. And editorial calendars are, you know, it's interesting. 10 years ago, major publications would put out their editorial calendar. Now they're doing a lot more kind of on the fly. The editorial calendars from the publication side are not as common and as rich as they used to be, but it's still really worth looking out for them and seeing, you know, what themes are they going to be working with throughout the year if they plan that kind of thing out, and making sure that several months in advance you get in there and share some opinions on the topics and offer yourself as an expert for sure.
Now, you're making a great case for the importance of hiring a PR firm. For the companies out there that have never done that before, do you have any advice of maybe some questions they should be asking the prospective PR firms, or some kind of red flags maybe about maybe this person isn't as qualified as they think they are?
Oh, sure. You know, if you're working with smaller boutique agencies, then typically the people who you initially talk to and who sell you on the program are often the folks that are actually going to be working on the program itself, right? So if you're talking to a bigger agency, you know, the big pain there is this bait and switch, right? They send out a certain level of really good talker, smart person to go out and pitch the business and sell it, and then you never see them again.
And then the person doing the work is somebody that's right out of college or something.
Yeah, right. So I would say to your audience, if you do think you want to work with an agency, that's terrific. And if you want, Lee, throw my email out there. And if anybody wants any advice for, you know, what to look for, gosh, contact me directly. That's totally fine. But get a sense of who's actually going to be working on the program. Make sure you chat with them. And then I always suggest that people do reference calls. And talk to people, not just who have worked with the agency as a whole, but specifically who's worked with that team. What'd you think? What worked, right? What didn't? Another thing that I think that your listeners really need to ask is how will that agency kick off a program, right? Because you mm-hmm. want to make sure that they're really going to dig into understanding your sales and marketing challenges and how to specifically address them, and then how to push that into the news and the topics the journalists are writing. Because an agency serves two masters, right? An agency right. serves its clients, but you're also serving the press. So you've got to keep that, those relationships and the value that you're bringing to the press there.
Right. And also, I think it's important that if you're in a specific industry, work with a firm that has some experience in that. At least if they're B2B, I'd feel more comfortable hiring them if right. if my product or service is B2B, as opposed to having a B2C specialist kind of learn on my dime on how to penetrate the right. B2B world, because those are two different animals.
Well, exactly. And there are some terrific agencies who handle, you know, consumer technology, consumer products, and others who handle, you know, more business technology. And the other thing is, your agency doesn't necessarily need to be right there in your backyard, because you, with the way that people are working today, the way the technology allows you to work, this is funny. I'm in Santa Barbara. I don't have one Santa Barbara client. We have clients. I got clients in Calgary, Washington, D.C., Austin, Texas, obviously the Bay Area, some California Bay Area, but not here. And it's fine. And if you're going to do, if you're going to work that way, the team needs to be really senior and self-starter, right? You can't have 20-year-olds who need to be handheld and, you know, making sure they're doing their job. So you need to make sure it's the right team if that's the kind of model that you're looking for. But it's very doable.
Now, in Kickstart Consulting, is that how your team is? You have a virtual team, so they're all over the country, but they're serving clients all over the country as well?
Yeah, in fact, a virtual agency is definitely a thing, right? Where, and I see that a lot in marketing agencies as well. You know, you might have people in New York and Florida and all over, and they're really good, senior, smart people, and they know how to work well, and it can be extremely efficient. So if you're looking at an agency, I would tell your audience this, who is a virtual team, do not be afraid of it. It could actually be even better than an agency that's on the ground in, you know, one building together.
So is that how Kickstart Consulting is? Are you, do you have your
yes,
team is
exactly
all
exactly how we are. Yep.
So now how yep. did you build that team? How did you kind of cobble together this portfolio of talent?
Well, it's not so much cobbled together as it is built through relationships and people that I've known, and people who say, oh, I've got this great person, you should work with them, you should talk to them. And I'm really excited because our team, the newbies on the team, oh, they've only been with us for 7 years, right? Everybody else, they've been with us, you know, 10 years, 12 years, wow. 15 years, because it's a model that just really works for them as well.
It gives them the flexibility to work with the firm, and it allows them to live where they want to live and kind of pick the clients they want to work with.
Yeah, exactly. So it's you know, it's a little different than in an agency that's in a brick and mortar building, but right. for us it works, and it gives us a really good level of talent to be able to work with.
Now, do you have any advice for the young person that's maybe they're in college now or they're going to soon to graduate? Is there, are you bullish kind of on the PR field as a career?
Yeah, I'm bullish on PR, and I'm also bullish on all things marketing and digital marketing and communications. So I think that students in college, if they're thinking they want to explore some of those fields, I would encourage them to learn to write clearly and succinctly. So I was actually an English lit major at UCLA. I studied Shakespeare and Chaucer mm-hmm. and John Donne, but that gave me an opportunity to really learn my craft of writing well. and to learn about how to explain and learn about how to draw different ideas together to create one cohesive concept. So all of that writing that you do in college, whether you do it through a philosophy major, an English lit major, or history major, all those majors are all really awesome because they're teaching you how to think. And they're teaching you how to communicate what is often very complex information. And that's really at the heart of what we do.
Now, if you're that young person, should you be having an online presence where you can demonstrate some of those skills?
Yeah, I would absolutely begin to build a portfolio through internships that you do, through job opportunities. So get in on the ground floor. Always offering your time as an intern is great for two reasons. One, it builds your business credibility, right? You have a job in a particular field that's important, and it lets you see what's that job about. Maybe I like it, maybe I don't. I had an internship just coming out of college for LA Magazine, and it was great. You know, I learned so much about all sides of the publication, the magazine publication industry. You know, I could see production, I could see content development, I could see writing, I could see the advertising side. So those types of very rich internships that to a student, you might feel like, well, that's a little random. No, actually, it's not random. It's all going to create an understanding of, you know, what you really gel well with and help you build your career.
Now, should you be having a blog or a podcast or video blog where you're actually demonstrating some of those skills? Like, would if an intern was kind of pitching themselves to you, is that something you would find valuable to actually see some of their work or see them in action?
Sure. And I'm not so sure they would be their own blogly, but more, you know, work that they've done on behalf of their clients or whoever they've been working with. So the portfolio is more about the work that they've done for others rather than their own blog and what they're thinking. I mean, if they've done their own blog too, that's great. That's fine. But I think for a college student, you know, I would focus on getting the work experience aspect of it rather than kind of pulling blogs out of your own head.
Mm-hmm. And then if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm or working with you, is there a website or what's the best way to, what coordinates are best?
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking. Kickstartconsulting.com. That's all jammed together. KICKSTART, immediately followed by the word consulting. And our blog's there. The website's there, and you can go ahead and connect with us through there. And if any of your audience just has questions or thoughts or comments or just wants advice, I'm more than happy to chat.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, Annette.
Well, thank you, Lee, and thanks, Katie, for, you know, asking me to come on board. This has been really fun.
All right. That was Annette Shimada with Kickstart Consulting. KickstartConsulting.com is the website. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Thought Leader Radio.